She said it was on.
It's natural resources.
So I'll put it up where now.
We like using paper in here, Eric.
Well, you've got to use it.
It's natural resources.
Otherwise, what's going to happen?
Exactly.
We're just wasting the trees.
No, that's what trees are for. That's right. We recycle. See, we have all this stuff. We recycle all this stuff. What are you looking for? You got everyone set up, right?
I got one more. I've got a hand on it. And I've only got one left.
Are you missing one? Hey, you want mine?
When it's over.
You ready? Mm-hmm. Ready? Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to convene the Subcommittee on Natural Resources, the Joint Ways and Means Committee. This is the May 24, 2017 meeting. Just by way of introduction here, we had a number of people who did not have an opportunity because there simply wasn't time to accommodate their public testimonies. We had heard from a number of folks that they felt very passionately about this topic and truly desired an opportunity to speak their piece. And your co-chairs heard you. And we're going to have a public hearing to finish those who were unable to testify last time. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2269 to complete the testimonies of those who were invited back. And I'd like to invite up, please, Jennifer Jones and Cindy Young.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to both of you. Welcome back. Sorry we had to bring you back a second time. But,
well, thank you for bringing us back.
Absolutely. Our pleasure.
So I'll begin. Chair Frederick and honorable members of the Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on Natural Resources. I am Jennifer Jones, Eastside Portland Air Coalition member, Precision Castparts neighbor, and mother to two children who grew up in the school airshed of Bullseye Glass. Thank you for this opportunity to return and give public testimony in support of HB 2269. There seems to be a lot of confusion about the additional one-time only fees to fund Cleaner Air Oregon. I have a cold, excuse me. Especially as fees are reviewed and increased periodically to meet states' needs, and this is a one-time only fee that benefits the entire state of Oregon. Let's start with the governor's request for additional funding for the air permitting that happened in early 2016. The requested amount came from the general fund. That's a $2.5 million investment of taxpayer-funded money. So we're going to call that the community investment. Now let's look at industry contributions via the one-time-only supplemental assessment fees. In fact, more than half of the one-time-only fees, I'm sorry, excuse me, Senator, that's not okay. I didn't know that. Are less than $100. In most cases, substantially less than $100. Please remember this is a one-time only fee that is a 16% increase from regular fees. If someone here is telling you that they can't support unknown fees, that they need to pay closer attention to the fee schedule, because this widely accessible spreadsheet, of which I have many copies, has every possibility laid out. If they need to know what their budgeted, if they know what their budgeted 2017 fees are, then they know exactly what their one-time fee will be, and it's an additional 16%. For example, if I'm a dry cleaner, my 2017 permit fee will be $288, so I know I will be assessed a one-time only fee of $46, and that is so the Department of Environmental Quality can do the work that I pay for them to do as a business owner and do the work that I pray they will do as a citizen and neighbor of that dry cleaner. We can talk about Title V emission fees for a moment. If an industry is emitting the maximum legal allowance of 100 tons per year of pollutant, that one-time fee could be around $9,000. For some perspective on that number, every case of asthma, and Oregon has some of the highest incidences of asthma, will cost Oregonians $5,300 a year in health care costs. The total of these one-time fees will make up a little less than $1.1 million. We'll call that the industry investment. If you've been keeping up with me, you'll remember the community investment was $2.5 million, and that you'll be comparing that to the industry investment of $1.1 million. I think it's fair in our commitment to the health of Oregonians to ask industries who are making the profits to contribute towards the assurance that they aren't poisoning their neighbor in the pursuit of those profits. Any misleading information you receive from those that oppose 2269 using intentionally subversive language such as unknown fees or job losses is purely a dramatic scare tactic from well-paid lobbyists and not from community stakeholders. I urge you today to support HB 2269 and Cleaner Air Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Chairs and members of the committee. My name is Cindy Young, and I'm a 30-year resident of Southeast Portland, residing less than half a mile from Bullseye Glass, a mother of three, and a member of Eastside Portland Air Coalition. And I'm here today in support of, House Bill 2269. I'm here just to plead. We've been working on this for a year and a half. Through Cleaner Air Oregon. We have a lot of sick people in our area, and it doesn't seem like we're heard. I could sit here and I can read my testimony and watch people's eyes glass over because I've heard the same thing over and over again. We have AOI sitting behind us in their suits, telling you that if we do this, that we're not, you know, everybody's business is going to close, nobody's going to have a job, and the end is near. Well, that's not true. Bullseye Glass spent money to filter their emissions. They're doing gangbusters. They lost no jobs, you know. They're not closing. Everything's good. I've had three precancerous tumors taken out. I have kids with bladder issues and things going on for years that I had no idea where it was coming from. I have better things to do than to drive down to Salem and to spend a year and a half of my life trying to fight for the health of my kids, for our community, for the schools. It doesn't make sense. Health costs are so much more than the cost to regulate this. Please give the money to DEQ so they can enforce the regulations that are needed for health. We had, during the Cleaner Air Oregon, we had meetings. We brought people from California, from Washington, from the East Coast to come and explain what is going on here. They have been through the same scenario. Health does get better. Health costs do go down when you follow stricter regulation. This is not made up. This isn't a bunch of people freaking out, a bunch of parents, you know, overzealous parents making this stuff up. It is fact. So please, give the money. EPAC, we will make sure that DEQ does its enforcing. Trust me, we'll be right there watching the whole thing. But we have to have the money to make this happen. We have to look at the facts. These are facts. They are not made up. Thank you for your time.
Thank you both very much. Your comments were both powerful and concise, which we appreciate. Subcommittee members, any questions or comments of our two witnesses?
I want to thank you as well.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Next, I'd like to call up, Peggy Lynch and Marilyn Knitzer. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. Let Marilyn begin.
Thank you very much. Co-Chair Frederick and Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, I'm Marilyn Kennitzer from Corvallis, representing League of Women Voters of Oregon on air quality issues. Thank you for the additional hearing today. We submitted testimony last time, and this is additional testimony, so we really appreciate the opportunity to do it again. And I'm going to not read the whole thing, only parts. Since June 2016, League has followed every meeting of Cleaner Air Oregon. Based on discussions of the Technical Advisory Work Group, we submitted testimony for each Regulatory Advisory Committee. One example is on Program Element 20, phasing. You will have to phase. You need the emissions inventory. You will have to process new and modified, which means the industries as they come along.
No, it's fine. Stay
okay.
Back.
All right. Use a four-year phase-in for existing sources, starting with the highest emitters first. Since you have a higher workload at implementation time, give all facilities a grace period of 2 years so they can fall under the new rules and you can adjust to the new program. The tiered computer programs can be run simultaneously to bring in lesser categories more efficiently. You will also have to hire or train personnel who know how to run the programs. We understand that some industries fear new regulations, but we must remember why the governor established Cleaner Air Oregon. Systematic lack of funding for DEQ to monitor, regulate, and enforce regulations resulted in unnecessary, unhealthy pollution. Our current program relies on industry to provide information related to their permits. Most businesses accurately comply. But we do know of cases where monitoring by DEQ would have provided the data needed to help both the businesses and the public to address pollution issues. And I can give you those examples later if you would like. From our observations of Cleaner Air Oregon meetings, we believe the DEQ has a new mandate to help businesses comply with new regulations in cost-effective ways. We expect DEQ to employ new tools such as pollution prevention programs. New regulations will have tiers of pollution limits, so many industries will not be affected. Most small businesses will submit emissions data with no further impact. We expect that industries located in rural areas will be largely unaffected, but those near environmental justice communities can expect more regulation. League believes that businesses will not be in jeopardy of having to cease operations due to new regulations. Our members work in many of these businesses and understand the nexus between jobs and providing food on the table and a roof over people's heads. We understand that government services such as education depend on income taxes from jobs. It's our intent to support a program grounded in science, informed by data, and health-based. League of Women Voters of Oregon believes very strongly that the one-time stand-up fees in HB 2269A should be approved. These fees will fund science review, data analysis, and a robust public outreach where businesses, workers, and the public can provide valuable input into any final rules. It's time to complete the CAO rules framework now. We must follow through to improve Oregon's air quality regulations while supporting businesses as they work to address air quality issues that may well have been unknown. We all need to work together to complete the rulemaking and set appropriate ongoing fees to address a program grounded in science, informed by data, and health-based in 2018. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Marilyn. Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon, co-chairs, members of the committee. So Marilyn has been following air quality issues, particularly in her Corvallis area, for years. So we are pleased.
I'm going to have to interrupt you. I apologize. I have to go testify, but I wanted everyone to know that I'm not leaving because I'm interested in what's going on. I just have to step out to go testify on something else, and then I'll be back. And I'm sorry to interrupt you, Ms. Lynch. Okay, go ahead.
No, that's fine. Thank you for that. So I wanted you to understand that Marilyn's comments today and expertise and on behalf of the League comes grounded in her science and in her database issues. The National League has been studying and been involved in creating the Clean Air Act. And the benefits of the Clean Air Act have far exceeded the cost of compliance. An EPA analysis of CAA's first 20 years found that the dollar value of the human health and environmental benefits amounted to more than 40 times the cost of regulation. From 1990 to 2010, as requirements have become more stringent, the EPA estimates a benefit to cost ratio of 4-1. So we are arguing both for the health of Oregonians and the fact that we believe that businesses also care about our community. They care about their workers, and they are a part of Oregon, and we need them to be successful too. But this is a program that without this money, we will not have the kind of public outreach that will do a good job of engaging everybody. So we need this one-time stand-up set of stand-up fees this session, and then we agree with members such as AOI that then in 2018 we have the conversation about exactly what those fees should be on an ongoing basis. So thank you very much for your time, and be happy to answer any questions.
Subcommittee members, anything additional? Peggy, benefits to cost numbers that you cited, did you include those in written form to us, or could we request them?
I did not. I pulled it out of the LWVUS position on Federal Clean Air Act as I was doing some research last
very
night.
Very good.
So I will do that.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Appreciate both of you appearing today.
Thank you.
And lastly, this afternoon, Catherine Vanetta. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, Catherine Vanetta, Governmental Affairs and Regulatory Affairs Manager of the Northwest Pulp and Paper Association, a trade association in Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, 61 years old, that works on environmental and energy issues that pertain to mill operations. We only do environmental and energy. I've been an employee of the association for the last 22 years working on these types of issues. I come before you today for the first time in those 22 years of legislative work in opposition to DEQ fees. We are opposed to the 16% fee increase for Cleaner Air Oregon. I have a paper handout in front of you that I'd like to refer to and talk about the magnitude of combined fees that face businesses today in the DEQ budget. And yes, these are fees that are unbudgeted because companies do their budgets in the fall for the next year most of the time. So let me preface this with DEQ raised what the Title V fee, and it was adopted at the January Environmental Quality Commission meeting in accordance with the Consumer Price Index, as you will see in House Bill 2269, because it is limited, those fees increases are limited to the Consumer Price Index unless it's acted by the legislature. The second thing I'd like to point out is that this fee increase is happening inside of the legislature for both the Title V program and the ACDP program. We would usually use a rulemaking, and these conversations would be in front of the department, but since these are legislative increases, the legislature and this committee in particular is acting as the rulemaking body, basically, and has the responsibility for deciding whether these fees are appropriate at this point in time. So turning to the page that says increase air contaminant discharge permit fees, these are fee numbers that are taken directly from DEQ information that was given to the ACDP, the Air Contaminant Discharge Permit Fee Fiscal Committee, that met in April. This fee committee met prior to you adopting that fee increase, and that budget amount, and we were asked to comment on the position restoration portion of the fee increase that you had not adopted yet. What this sheet shows is it shows the magnitude of all air fees in front of you this session, with the number of permit holders, the current annual fee, as folks have talked about today, the one-time supplemental assessment for Clean Air Oregon to last this time, which is 16%, what the complaint response fee would be, you're working on that policy option package under your consideration also, and the fee to maintain the ACDP air program. Combined, those fees would be about 30 to 40% increase across the board for your facilities. But also, in the position restoration package, if you turn the page on the packet that is in front of you, you will find proposed new fees. And that there are these under proposed new fees, the department has gone back to asking for a renewal application fee. So that means every 5 years when your permit is renewed, you get an additional fee. And for certain classes, it's $205, $410. But I'd like to focus on the $2,000 fee and the $4,000 fee. Those are your largest fee folks in this thing, but that would mean that they would be paying their base fee plus the renewal fee on some years when their permit comes up. So that would be actually not a 30 to 40% increase. That would be almost a doubling of their fees on those years that you will have under consideration before you now. And also, the department is asking for a new fee category for a source test review. The source test review would also be $2,052 and $4,100, the same as the permit renewal fee. And we question if that is a workload analysis for a nexus of work, whether how those two fees could be exactly the same. We like to see, and we understand the need to provide fees for work for the department. We never question that. What we question is the appropriate level of fee for the workload that the department performs. And when we see numbers that are the same for a permit renewal fee or a source test review that's currently performed under their yearly fee, then we wonder whether those numbers are calculated on a workload basis or whether they are back calculated to try to reach a number. Going on further to the next sheet, during the ACDP position restoration fiscal committee, once again in April, of which I was a member, we asked what the current expenditure limitation in the ACD program was, and we asked for what the vacancy position was in order to assess what the ending balance would be and whether all those positions were filled. And what we found in the ACDP and Title V programs is that there was a 21% vacancy rate. And the 21% vacancy rate went across different types and classifications. You see that provided for you. These, once again, are department handouts given to that ACDP committee. And what you see is that some of these positions are open, some of them are in recruitment, some of them are unaffordable. And so our question for you, as the committee, looking at the mix of air fees this session in the air contaminant discharge permit program, is to think about the vacancy rate, the ending balance, and the mix of fees needed. And if you turn to the next page, what you're going to see is the question, what is the number of positions held vacant to cover the current costs of the Clean Air Oregon related work? And I'm not going to read that answer, the agency's answer there, but you can see that. But what we unfortunately also have, if I read between the lines of that answer, is that Clean Air Oregon has affected the work of the agency and slowed down the regular work of the agency. For example, the agency adopts rules that the federal government puts forth by reference. Included in these are maximum achievable control technologies and other federal regulations. Whether the state adopt them or not, we still must comply. The state is about a year and a half late adopting some of these, and they keep on moving back the rulemaking for various reasons. Included in this is Boiler MACT, which regulates us, but they haven't adopted it. So we question whether the department isn't getting their current workload done, which does either point to not well-managed work or a lack of fees, and we would ask that you investigate and think critically about why these things are occurring in our state. And so we've also asked about what percentage of the fee increases result of the PERS rate also. And then the final page is the fee increase impacts, and this breaks down the different types of businesses, and you can look for the different types of businesses located in your district, the number of small businesses, the current annual fees, the proposed fees, what the new application fee was, so you can get an idea of the folks in your district and the amount of fee that they are going to be paying. At this time, also pulp and paper mills pay Title V air fees, and you hear me focusing on ACDP, but you must realize that every fee payer for air in the state is also subject to that fee table because we do pay fees for that table. That fee table was in existence before the Title V program, and that's the reason why we pay fees from both tables. Title V fees are scheduled to increase under the Cleaner Air Oregon program 16%, as well as the ACDP program. That is a large increase if you are a large business. That about money that they want to charge that 16% increase on goes across about 109 facilities, because those are your large air permittees in this state. So you're going to have those folks paying for about half of the new program. But please realize that they are charging increases in fees down to dry cleaners. I don't know if the dry cleaners will be regulated, so you're asking everybody to step up and pay for part of that that does air in this state, as well as a general fund that's out there. So, in closing, the businesses that I represent and those that I also talked to, because unfortunately I'm kind of the expert on the DEQ budget fees, just because I have gray hair. I have a beard, but I'm a girl. Is that we didn't budget for these fees. They are coming. We knew there were fee increases. We were just hoping that they wouldn't be this big. And so the question is, are we effectively using the resources at our disposal? And if we have so many open positions, why do we have the open positions? If we aren't getting our work done, shouldn't we be recruiting those if we have the money? And if we don't have the money, do we need more money? And I would be happy to answer any questions. And I don't think in case I lost anybody along the way.
Thank you very much. Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Witt. I apologize that I had to step out. Can you remind me of your name again, please?
Catherine Venata.
Okay, just want to make sure I understood the right person on the agenda here. And then can somebody tell me, I don't know, staff or somebody, who prepared this document?
These are all DEQ documents.
Right. Did you prepare the chart, though?
No.
They gave you this chart.
They gave us this chart.
Okay. And then from this information, would you be able to tell us what percentage of your profits it would cost each of your clients in order to do this? So let's say you had one of the fees here, and one of them is $144, going up to $164, you know, whatever it is, when any of these fees and when the changes of what the current and then what the proposed, what the cost would be percentage-wise of the total profits for each of your clients?
Co-chairs, Senator Taylor. First of all, I don't have clients. I'm an employee of the Northwest Pulp and Paper Association, okay. And I represent the pulp and paper mills.
Right.
And the pulp and paper mills would pay Title V fees.
Mm-hmm.
Our Title V fees are between $100,000 and $200,000 per year.
Mm-hmm.
And we also pay various ACDP fees depending mm-hmm. upon what's going on.
Right. I'm just trying to get a sense of what the percentage of the profit is.
And to address your question directly, if it's a privately held company, I cannot answer that question. And if
okay.
it's a publicly held company, I would say that the answer is small. But I also want to point out that I do also represent small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are, our members have facilities in Oregon other than pulp and paper mills, and they would be facing the 30 to 40% unbudgeted fee increase.
Follow up?
Please.
Thank you, Chair Witt. So, but for the ones that are the Title V, which are the more expensive ones, those are not the small businesses that you represent, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, so there's been, I just wanted to like to make a comment, Representative Witt, is that the fees that we've been charging to date and the increase, one can argue that perhaps the fees already were too low. I appreciate you inquiring, as all citizens should inquire about any of the budgets here in Oregon, and I'm sure DEQ, I don't know if we're going to do that today, but I'm sure they're more than capable of answering the questions about those, and I'm sure you could also contact the agency directly to have those questions answered. But the it is important that we look at the fee structures that are currently being charged, and we are wanting to increase the monitoring, and we were trying to launch a program here with the Cleaner Air Oregon because we are having an air quality problem here in the state, and we want to examine it. We want to have a program. We want to have an infrastructure, and that's why we're looking at increasing the fees. So I just wanted to go ahead and make that comment. So thank you. Thank you so much for coming to testify.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Esquivel.
I just want to specify that we did quite a thing in Southern Oregon. We got together as a community and discussed it not only with the business community, but the private sector and the people themselves, the community, the DEQ, and so on and so forth. And right now, our particulate level is 33% of what the rest of the state is. It's a community issue, and you can't fix it by having a government entity do it. You have to have buy-in from the community, and that's what we have done. Example, in Medford, in the greater Rogue Valley area, particulate levels in the state of Oregon are 15 tons a year. In our valley, it's 5. So it's a third of what the rest of the state is. So it can be done, but I think it needs to be done with the community base because the community is the ones that live there.
Thank you. Catherine, I very clearly understood your, I assume to be opposition to the magnitude of the fee increase. I also understood you'd be concerned with the restoration of a position under one of the POPs. I could conclude that you also had problems with the process in which that happened, and I don't want to either walk away from this hearing with a wrong impression or put words in your mouth, but were you suggesting that the process was flawed?
co-chairs, members of the committee, it is an unusual process that the DEQ chose for the position restoration work, in that before a level was adopted by this committee and passed by the legislature, they assembled a group of fee payers, including dry cleaners, crematoriums, pulp and paper, wood preservers, AOI, OFIC, concrete and aggregate folks that have rock crushers, and your small pavers in your communities, and asked us about the fees before you'd passed a budget. So we were in the awkward position of having to comment on that. and provide input to the DEQ on a budget that hadn't passed and the fee increase while these other fees were under consideration for Cleaner Air Oregon and for the odor complaint and work. And so the approach of doing that is that usually after you pass the budget, the DEQ will do a temporary rulemaking in which they don't allow public comment and then do a formal rulemaking to adopt the fee increase later. But they chose to do it before and during the budgeting process here. So your regulated community was very confused whether that was something you wanted to have happen or whether they said that they were doing it so it we had a say about the fees and the type of fees, mm-hmm. but it's an unprecedented thing that we don't understand, which leads to our confusion and our pushback until we understand what's happening inside of the program, the details of what's happening with Clean Air Oregon, and the overall magnitude of problems with natural resource agencies being underfunded, and just the nexus of where the fees are going and for what work.
Thank you for that explanation. Representative Power.
Thank you. Catherine, I have to admit, I'm a little confused. I just heard you articulate during your public testimony that you're concerned about additional fees, some of which are stacking and much higher in scale compared to this one-time assessment under Clean Air Oregon. But then I just heard you articulate that you prefer DEQ not to consult with you on those fees in advance. Can you help clarify that for me?
Co-chairs, Representative Power, I'm sorry if I shorten that explanation. I said it was unprecedented that the DEQ held a committee on a budget that had not passed, a fiscal fee committee to look at the amount. And so when that occurred, it put the regulated entities in a difficult position of commenting on something that this body had not even voted on. And so we are regulated entities. So we met with the department, but the thing is that was it the cart before the horse? We didn't know the legislature's will. And so it was confusing for us with everything that's going on out there.
Anyone else? Yes.
Thank you, Chair Witt. Regarding, you made a comment about how the natural resource agencies are underfunded, and perhaps I assume that you're aware of the fact that the vast majority of the natural resource agencies are funded through fees, and they only receive, I think it's approximately 1-2%, staff can confirm, between 1-2% of the general fund for the natural resource agencies combined come from the general fund. I think that's correct, right, approximately?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, about 2% come from the general fund and from the constitutionally dedicated lottery funds of Measure 76.
Okay, thank you for that reminder. And so the rest comes from fees, and so that's why it's very important that although we do not want to be putting unreasonable fees on entities that the natural resources need to regulate, but that is the nature of how we do it here in the state of Oregon. As of now, I would be all for, especially if we could generate more revenue for the state, to have more of it come from the general fund. But all 14 of our natural resource agencies are underfunded. That is absolutely the case. And that is why fees sometimes need to be increased. And we are having an air quality problem in certain regions of the state more than others. That is a true statement. However, we need to have a program to monitor the air quality. And that is why we're looking at increasing the fees. So I just wanted to put that on the record. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Seeing no one, Catherine, thank you very much. Appreciate your appearance. I want to thank, again, everyone who returned today to testify on House Bill 2269 and helping us to better understand your concerns and helping us to complete the record on that bill. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing and open an informational meeting on the Oregon Department of Forestry. Peter, as you're coming up, just so that we can do some time management here, I have 20 minutes left on the clock. Can you accommodate both issues in that amount of time?
Yeah.
Maybe even a little quicker to allow for a question or two?
Sure.
Greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good afternoon, Chairs Frederick and Witt, members of the committee. I am Peter Doherty, and I serve as the Oregon State Forester and Director of the Department of Forestry. I'm joined by Satish Upadhyay, our Division Chief of Administrative Services, and he'll be providing the update on our procurement purchase order system replacement project or forestry buys. And I'll turn it over to Satish for that.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Witt and Frederick and members of the subcommittee. For the record, I'm Satish Upadhyay. I serve as the Chief of the Administrative Services Division and CFO for the Oregon Department of Forestry. The Department of Forestry appreciates this opportunity to provide you with information with regards to our procurement purchase order system replacement project, which is also known as forestry buys. And keeping in mind the time factor, I will be quick. The goal of this project is to replace our current antiquated payment system with modern purchasing and procurement software. This would enable ODF to have a system that provides appropriate controls over our procurement processes from request to payment. Let's first talk about some of the key challenges of our current system. ODF's current purchase order system was deployed around the mid-1990s, utilizing a legacy version of PowerBuilder that is no longer supported by the software manufacturer. That means it is outdated. Secondly, it's more of a payment system than a procurement system. This is because the system allows for a purchase to be entered for payment, but it does not allow us to manage the entire procurement process from the requisition to receipt of goods and services. And the department is unable to strategically plan its purchases on an agency level, which leads to audit and cost containment issues. Next, also the current system has several limitations. It does not interface with our current procurement databases, and also there is limited interface with our financial system. And on top of that, at current in forestry, all the paperwork has to be brought into Salem to process the procurements. So what that does is in times of high fire seasons and when we have high volume of transactions, this leads to system limitation, it'll be very slow and cumbersome to pay the vendors. Last but not the least, several Secretary of State audits and federal audits, as well as our own studies over the last several years, have identified that ODF's current system is not adequate for internal controls, reporting, contract development, document management, among other issues. And all of these studies and audits have recommended that ODF have an enterprise-wide purchasing and procurement system. So that is the history. Now a little bit of what have we done moving forward. You, the legislature, during the February 2016 legislative session, provided a little over $700,000 of general fund appropriation and $815,000 of other funds expenditure authority to move this project forward so that ODF can have a new procurement system. So the legislative funding was approved, but we were given directions that the funds would be unscheduled until the Legislative Fiscal Office and the DASH Chief Financial Office approved rescheduling after the agency complied with several requirements. And there were four more main requirements. One was direction that the agency develop an updated business case and some foundational documents. It's for a process called Stage Gate 3 process. This is a requirement set by LFO and the state CIO's office. Secondly, we were asked to acquire the services of an independent quality management vendor to conduct risk assessments and quality control assessments. And also we were asked to report to the legislature in September of 2016, which we did. And also we were directed to work closely with the Legislative Fiscal Office and the state CIO's office to meet their requirements, which we are doing. Now with regards to actions taken, so to complete these required due diligence activities as directed by the legislature, ODF has collaborated with eight other agencies with similar needs for improved automated procurement, purchase order, and payment systems and processes. So now we have nine agencies that have joined forces to identify, procure, and contract for procurement software package that can be used by all of these collaborative agencies. And these other agencies include the Secretary of State, Department of Human Services, Oregon Health Authority, Department of Education, Department of Administrative Services, Department of Consumer and Business Services, the Oregon Judicial Department, Department of Revenue, and the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. So with support of the DAS Chief Operating Officer's Enterprise Leadership Team and the Office of the State CIO, these agencies formed the Oregon BISE Project. So you will hear the term Forestry BISE and Oregon BISE. So Oregon BISE is the collaboration of these nine agencies with the goal of establishing a statewide price agreement for an integrated commercial off-the-shelf product that allows all of the collaborating agencies to implement over time. So ultimately, the goal is the deployment of an integrated shared services procurement to payment system that initially ODF and later all the other agencies would migrate over time. And all other state agencies would be able to acquire this product if they so required. So to date, what has happened? We have completed the stage gate one and two processes as said by the state CIO's office and are working on stage gate three approval, for which we would need a detailed business case and additional foundational documents. Also, we work jointly with the other collaborative agencies to build the requirements and develop a request for proposal for the end-to-end procurement system. And I'm glad to report that we have selected a vendor, Periscope Holdings, and the price agreement was signed just a couple of weeks ago on May 5th. So the project is moving forward. And also, ODF has acquired the services of an independent quality assurance vendor, MTG, for risk assessment on a periodic basis. So also what's happened is these participating agencies, the Oregon BISE group, have formed a governance group, and also we are working on a thing called Oregon Instance. So what Oregon Instance is, it's like in a car, you have an engine, so every participating agency will have a seat behind that. So the Oregon instance will help all the agencies work together on things like common naming conventions, high-level implementations, and workflow issues. And we are working with the vendor to put all these things together. So next step, once the Oregon instance work order is complete, ODF will begin the implementation of the project. At this point, we anticipate the project to be done by March of 2018. So to conclude, with this new system, ODF will have a purchasing and procurement system that adheres to agency standards, that meets the Secretary of State and federal audit requirements. We'd be able to implement controls to reduce risk, fraud, and abuse. We would be able to reduce redundancies and also address security issues, system failures, or data losses. And we'd become part of a group of collaborating agencies using the same software. So a big advantage by partnering with eight other agencies is that we are able to get the system at a significantly reduced rate. In other words, the collaborative procurement of Oregon BISE comes at significant savings to each of the participating agencies compared to what these agencies would have to pay if they contracted directly with Periscope. So that is my report and would be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, subcommittee members. One question and one comment. The question first, I recognize that it's difficult to account for a dollar that was never spent, but is there any way for you to help quantify for us the kind of savings that the department expects, X percent off a purchase order or some way? What kind of economy of scale might we expect?
Yes, so Mr. Co-Chair, yes, I think I can answer that question. For ODF, the legislature approved of like around $1.5 million for this project, and we were also authorized to use around $300 of existing budget, so like $1.8 million. At this point, we are looking at $700,000, and we've already spent $272,000. So that is big savings, and this is a rough estimate.
Yes.
If all of these nine agencies were to move forward together, we're estimating a savings of $6 million in 2017-19, if all of them implemented in 2017-19. So this is big savings.
And now my comment, I would like to see that $6 million extrapolated across all of the state agencies. I think that the nine of you that have engaged in this endeavor should should be instructive to the rest of the state that a lot of taxpayer money could be saved. So thank you for your efforts in this regard.
And a bit of a clarification, the $6 million number I used was if all of the nine agencies implemented in the next biennium. At this point, I think we are.
Thank you.
ODF is going forward, Secretary of State is going forward, and I believe education and one other agency, they are thinking of moving.
Thank
and
you.
ODFW. So.
Thank you very, very much. And now quickly to the Oregon fire season insurance, and we have about 6 minutes left. I'm
sorry. All right. That's okay. I'll bring Doug Graff up, our Chief of Fire Protection, to quickly review this topic.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Witt, co-chairs Fredericks, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Doug Graff. I serve as Chief of Fire Protection, Oregon Department of Forestry. Before you, have a letter from the department with a request of appropriation of general fund, $1.689 million, $72 of general fund, and an equal other funds authorization to pay for the 2017 catastrophic wildfire insurance policy. This is a policy that we've had for the state for since 1973, and over that time we've paid $64 million in premiums and has received $102 million in lodge fire cost suppression reimbursed through the policy. This obviously is a favorable policy for the state through that time, and it's driven through the catastrophic fire seasons of 13-14, where we had full claims against the policy, $25 million each in those years. The total premium for the policy is approximately $3.4 million. That's a $150,000 reduction from last year, given we did not see a claim against the policy last year. This is a policy that covers a $25 million in large fire costs and has a $50 million deductible. The other funds authorization portion of the request relates to the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund. We have those dollars available to us now, and that's through the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund. These are landowner dollars that match up to 50% of the premium cost of this policy annually. And with that, I'll close testimony. Take any questions.
Well done. Well done. subcommittee members, anything? Senator Girard, please.
I know that they're going to get added back in, but if we reduced fire suppression by 33 firefighters, would we still have an insurance policy?
Chair Girard, co-chairs, members of the committee. That's the first. Did you say they are being restored? That's the first I've heard that. That would be encouraging. First of all. So I'm encouraged there.
He said 20. No, he said 20.
We speak every year to Lloyd's of London, and we tell a very strong story about the fire protection system, the complete and coordinated fire protection system that we have in the state of Oregon. And any time that we go back and speak with Lloyd's of London and have to discuss any reductions in that, then that lends some credibility on the system. Specifically to the 33 firefighters, I don't think that would be the case compared to the whole complete coordinated fire protection system. I think the total claims from 13 and 14 would be reason enough at that time to divest in the state of Oregon if that was the case, and we were able to hold that policy through that challenging time.
Anyone else? Gentlemen, thank you very much for the information, and certainly appreciate your presentation in a timely fashion. Greatly appreciated. Thank you so much. With that, I'm going to close the informational meeting for the Department of Forestry. Folks, anything for the good of the order?
One thing is tomorrow.
Please.
Tomorrow, members of the subcommittee, tomorrow I do want to tell you that the meeting materials for the work session on Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife have been posted to OLIS, so please do take a look at those. It's a fairly lengthy budget. I know that Paul's going to be going through that budget with you, and he's going to be going program by program with that, but please do take a look at those documents if you get a chance.
And if anybody has any specific questions you'll be available
Absolutely.
before the meeting, because this is a large budget. So we recognize that there's a lot of information there. Folks have questions. Get it cleared up. Yes, Senator Girard, please.
I want to bring it up, the spotted frog situation.
Yes.
And I've asked ODF&W to get back if they can raise spotted frogs, and if they could also put a bounty on bullfrogs. This is all about Central Oregon, specifically around the Bend area. So I just wanted to bring that up. That we might need a budget.
Yeah. Really? Okay, very, very good, very good. Time is short, folks. Exceptionally so. So, please keep that in mind. Also, I know a great recipe for frog's legs too. So, with that, I'm going to adjourn this subcommittee meeting. Thank you all very, very much. Thank you all very, very much. Subcommittee meeting.